Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Relations between the U.S. and China continue to deteriorate ahead of trade talks tomorrow.
The Fed unveils plans to calm money markets and hints at additional rate cuts.
Johnson & Johnson is ordered to pay $8 billion in the largest jury award this year.
The White House says it will not comply with an impeachment inquiry. Plus, Turkish troops are crossing into Syria. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, more rest for the Yankees as the Rays force an elimination game and the Islanders single-handedly beaten at home.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures rebounding from yesterday's losses, coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 13 points this morning. Dow futures up 89. NASDAQ futures up 34. The DAX in Germany's up 0.7%. CAC in Paris up 0.5%. And the FTSE 100 up less than 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.6%. And the Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 1.53%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.42%. NYMEX crude oil is down about 0.1% or 5 cents at $52.59 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.5% or $6.80 at $15.1070 an ounce. The euro 1.0985 against the dollar, yen 107.27. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with relations between the U.S. and China continuing to deteriorate just one day before trade negotiations. After blacklisting 8 Chinese tech companies, the U.S. is now slapping visa bans on officials linked to the mass detention of Muslims in China. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Selena Wang in Beijing.
The mood going into these trade talks couldn't be worse. The timing is quite provocative. It's noteworthy. We're just days away from the trade talks, and this is the first significant public step by a major world government to take action against Beijing on these alleged human rights violations in Xinjiang, which the UN has said as many as 1 million ethnic Uyghurs and Muslims have been detained in the region, while China has defended itself by saying that this is part of its legitimate counterterrorism efforts. And since this news has come out, this alleged violations have been put front and center on the global stage, and this is the last thing China wants to be highlighted in the public sphere.
The travel ban rattled investors late yesterday, sending the S&P 500 lower by 1.5%.
Now, Reuters reports that China is planning tighter visa restrictions for U.S. nationals associated with the CIA and the military. We're also hearing low expectations for trade talks from Chinese state-run media. Bloomberg Market strategist David Finnerty has more.
There's an editorial in the Global Times newspaper, which is out of China, and in it they keep referring to common themes, and one of them is the attitude that the U.S. is not sincere, the mutual distrust is increasing, and that's sort of a voice for China. So I think when it come out of this, nothing will be resolved. I think President Trump, therefore, will ratchet up tariffs. China will retaliate. But then going into, I think, next year, I think President Trump will be the one who actually will blink first. And I think the reason being is if that stock market does start to downtick, I think he can't afford to go into election with that going down. And I think he knows that himself.
People close to the Trump administration say they have a narrow path to a deal with China. Even hawks in the White House recognize there's a limit to what Beijing will commit to.
And all that tension led to a down day for stocks in Asia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. South Korea was closed for a public holiday, while elsewhere, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index gave back Tuesday's gains and some, with stocks in Japan, Hong Kong and Taiwan leading declines. Chinese stocks on the mainland edged higher, while the PBOC set the daily yuan reference rate stronger than expected. And in Taipei, TSMC reported record third quarter sales after the bell. Shares, though, had retreated from near record highs. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Remarks from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell are also reverberating through markets this morning.
My colleagues and I will soon announce measures to add to the supply of reserves over time. Our goal is to provide an ample supply of reserves to ensure that control of the federal funds rate and other short-term interest rates is exercised primarily by setting our administered rates and not through frequent market operations.
Powell says the Fed will resume Treasury purchases to avoid turmoil in money markets, but insists the move is not a return to quantitative easing. Richard Jones is an FX and rate strategist for Bloomberg.
The Fed is embarking on an easing cycle. It'll extend into next year, but it's very methodical. It's very slow moving. We've got the actual probability of a rate cut this month and in December inching a little bit higher after Powell's remarks. So the messaging is dovish. Rate cuts coming this month, rate cuts coming in December, and further easing into next year.
And Bloomberg customers can see pricing for future rate policy by typing WIRP Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
And up next, more insight from the Fed. We get minutes from the Central Bank September meeting at 2 p.m. Wall Street time today. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
The Fed cut its benchmark interest rate by a quarter point at September's meeting, the second consecutive reduction. Bloomberg Economics says the minutes could sound somewhat hawkish relative to recent remarks by Fed officials leaning toward further easing. That's because there are signs the economy is weakening. The Fed's policy panel meets again at the end of this month. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinnie, thank you. On the corporate front, Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $8 billion over the alleged mishandling of an antipsychotic drug. The medication is blamed for causing adolescent boys to grow female-sized breasts. The $8 billion award is the largest in U.S. this year and has shares of J&J down 1.5% in early trading.
Shares of Levi Strauss fell 0.5% after earnings showed a revenue decline in the U.S. We get the details from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Revenue in its home market fell as the company is navigating an increasingly crowded denim market. While net revenue climbed in both Europe and Asia, Levi's struggled in the Americas, its largest market. The company said net revenue fell 3% because of a decline in the wholesale business. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. On the M&A front, ExxonMobil considering a sale of its upstream offshore assets in Malaysia. This according to sources who say the sale could raise $2 to $3 billion. Exxon has started talking to potential buyers, although steps are at a preliminary stage.
Yeah, and Saudi Aramco is expected to publish its IPO prospectus before the end of the month. The Wall Street Journal says Aramco is in the final stages of preparing to list shares on its domestic exchange. The prospectus will reportedly be published in Arabic on October 25th and in English 2 days later. This is Bloomberg. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time now to check the latest world and national news headlines with Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The White House declared in a letter they sent to the House of Representatives it's an illegitimate impeachment probe by House Democrats. The White House also says it will stop cooperation with the House investigation. Yesterday, President Trump blocked the appearance of the U.S. ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, on Capitol Hill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
The president is obstructing Congress from getting the facts that we need. That is an abuse of power for him to act in this way. And that is one of the reasons that we have an impeachment inquiry.
Meanwhile, Republican Representative Matt Gaetz criticized House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff's leadership of the investigation.
What we see in this impeachment is a kangaroo court, and Chairman Schiff is acting like a malicious Captain Kangaroo.
Turkish troops have begun crossing into northeastern Syria to force back Kurdish militants away from its border. That's what a Turkish official told Bloomberg today. The move comes after the U.S. said it would not stand in the way. The Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces said they would fight to defend their own people, potentially relegating the battle against the Islamic State. What did Bernie Sanders know and when did he know it when it comes to the heart attack he suffered last week? Bloomberg's Bob Moon explains why that's a pertinent question.
There's a routine test that likely would have told doctors within hours whether Sanders was indeed having a heart attack, but it took his campaign several days to disclose the severity of the episode. Bloomberg asked the Sanders campaign if he had that blood test per standard procedure. A Sanders campaign aide declined to comment further. Sanders is promising to make his medical records public.
We've always planned to release them, and we have more medical records. Obviously, now, and we will release them at the appropriate time.
While the episode has raised questions about the 78-year-old senator's fitness for the stress of the presidency, many people who have heart attacks and are treated go on to have long lives. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
California's PG&E says it will cut off power to about 800,000 customers. The utility is trying to prevent a series of wildfires like the ones 2 years ago that burned more than 200,000 acres and claimed 44 lives. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Good morning, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. We know how impressive the Yankees are, but it's safe to say most would rather play the Rays than the Astros in the ALCS. Tampa Bay keeping that dream alive on Tuesday.
Out of the windup, the veteran right-hander deals. There's a high drive, deep in the air, left center field. Brantley turns and looks. It's gone! Home run! Willie Adames has homered again.
Rays radio as they beat future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander on short rest 4-1 to force a decisive Game 5 in Houston on Thursday. Verlander allowed four runs, didn't make it out of the fourth inning. The Rays, playing for their season, used six pitchers, including Cy Young winner Blake Snell, to close it out. If Houston wins, they'll have home field. If the Rays win, it belongs in the Bronx. The Islanders saw enough of Edmonton's James Neal to last a lifetime. He lit the lamp four times at Barclays Center to dismantle the Isles 5-2. Islanders coach Barry Trotz.
I think we were looking for an easy game. I'm disappointed with that because we knew it wasn't going to be. And we had it handed to her. We didn't have a great start. We never got too many turnovers, too soft on the battle, and, you know, took too many penalties.
The Oilers improved to 3-0. The Islanders are 1-2. In the NFL, Saquon Barkley said he won't rule himself out for Thursday's game when the Giants visit the Patriots. And the Jets' Sam Darnold is officially back and will start Sunday when the Jets host the Cowboys. And from Germany, congratulations to Team USA Women's Gymnastics, who overcame controversy to rout the field of the 2019 World Gymnastics Championship on Tuesday to claim a fifth consecutive team gold medal and seventh overall. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
No, meanwhile, Rob, no end to controversy for the NBA in China. The association is losing more sponsors following that Twitter post backing protesters in Hong Kong. China's biggest sportswear maker and a large dairy firm are suspending commercial ties to the league. Smartphone maker Vivo and an instant noodle company are also ending NBA marketing activities as China flexes its economic muscles for political ends. This is Bloomberg. Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit burdenllp.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and sources tell Bloomberg China is still open to agreeing to a partial trade deal with the U.S., signaling that Beijing is focused on limiting the damage to the world's second largest economy. And that headline just crossing the Bloomberg. China's offshore yuan extended its gain following that news. It was up about 0.5% right after, now up about 0.4% at 7.1345 against the dollar. Futures this morning are up about 26 points. Dow futures up 207. NASDAQ futures up 76. The DAX in Germany is up 1.3%. The 10-year Treasury down 6/32nds, yield 1.54%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.43%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6% or 33 cents at $52.95 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.33%, up $5.50 at $15.09.70 an ounce. And the euro, 1.0982 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2244. And the yen is at 107.31. And just watching this headline as well, Greece drawing a negative yield for the first time in its three-month bill sale. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Turkish troops have begun crossing into Syria. An official in Ankara told that to Bloomberg today. The Kurds, who supported the U.S. fight against the Islamic State, say they are fighting to protect their own people. The Trump administration has notified the House it will not participate in what they call the illegitimate impeachment probe led by Democrats. In Major League Baseball, the Rays forced a deciding Game 5 in their ALDS with the Astros after a 4-1 win. This evening, there are two other Game 5s in the NLDS. The Nationals play at the Dodgers. The Cardinals play at the Braves. In the NHL, the Islanders and Capitals lost. The Bruins won. Simone Biles led the U.S. women's team to another team gold at the World Gymnastics Championships in Germany. Biles became the most decorated female gymnast in history, winning her 21st World Championship medal. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 5:20 on Wall Street Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Lindsay Piegza joins us now, chief economist at Stifel Nicolaus. And Lindsay, I want to get a little deeper to the news that Karen just broke on the U.S.-China trade front. Sources are telling us that Beijing would accept a limited deal with the U.S. as long as no more tariffs are imposed, including the next couple rounds of heightened duties that are due to kick in this year. And in return, Beijing would offer non-core concessions like agricultural buys, but not give in on major sticking points. Is this the kind of deal that you could see the U.S. agreeing to?
It is a question of whether or not the Trump administration would accept this type of deal, because as we know, Chinese officials are not optimistic about securing a broad-based agreement that would essentially end this trade and tariff war. But they're talking about some sort of concession, some sort of limited deal. The Trump administration all along has really been talking about not willing to engage in a deal unless it is, in fact, a good deal for the U.S. and unless it addresses some of these fundamental issues, which these concessions, talking about agricultural purchases, they're not really addressing some of the major sticking points when we talk about forced transfer of technology, access to markets, et cetera. So I don't know if the Trump administration would, one, consider this a win, and if not, then accept this type of deal.
What would the impact be to the U.S. economy if a prolonged trade war like the one we're under were to continue?
Well, I think we're already seeing the negative ramifications. When we look at the domestic manufacturing base, it's very clear that we've moved now into contractionary territory, and any type of scenario that continued to exacerbate these conditions would further repress domestic output. And of course, this translates then into broader issues like reduced productivity, reduced output, reduced access to global marketplaces, increased costs for producing goods for the final consumer. Now, whether or not those cost increases actually are passed on directly to the consumer, or if we see these more of an indirect impact via reduced hiring, reduced investment, reduced wages, or all of the above, this will have a negative impact eventually on the end consumer.
If we continue to see these signs of contraction in the U.S. economy, does that push the administration toward being amenable to something like a partial deal, or does it force the Fed to take some sort of action?
Well, I think the Trump administration is taking more of a longer-term perspective. Yes, there will be short-term pain. They've acknowledged that. But I do think they're looking at this also from a relative standpoint. The U.S. is experiencing some downward momentum, but China, as an export-dependent economy, is certainly feeling the brunt of the pain. So I do think the Trump administration is willing to take some short-term concessions in terms of economic output, knowing that the counterpart is likely to give in first. That being said, as we do continue to see this downward pressure on the economy, I do think the pressure is going to be amped up on the Fed to continue to offer additional accommodation to the U.S. economy. We're looking out to the October FOMC meeting, and it is likely that we see the Fed step in and give us a third round rate cut.
Do you think the Fed is heading toward an easing cycle at this point?
Oh, absolutely. Whether or not they're willing to admit it yet, that remains the question. We're seeing them still characterize types of policy adjustments as a mid-cycle recalibration, or as we saw in September, they characterized it as an insurance-style cut. But I do think it's very clear that as the economy continues to lose momentum, the committee will be forced to acknowledge that the end of the credit cycle is nearer than they had previously forecast, and the next change in policy, as we expect in October, is going to be seen as outright support for a faltering economy and not any type of insurance style or mid-cycle adjustment.
Lindsay Piggs, a chief economist at Stifel Nicolaus. Thanks for the insights this morning. With a lot happening on the economic front, and again, the breaking news on the U.S.-China trade story, sources telling Bloomberg, people with direct knowledge of the talks, that China is still open to a partial trade deal, a limited deal as long as no more tariffs are imposed by the Trump administration. In return, Beijing would offer non-core concessions without giving in on major sticking points. And U.S. futures contracts are moving higher now, with S&P futures up almost 24 points. Dow futures are higher by 188 points, and NASDAQ futures a gain of 71 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Withum. Withum's financial services team combines private equity markets expertise with deep industry insights to address the advisory, audit, and tax needs of your fund's portfolio companies. Visit Withum.com/PE for more information.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Eisner Amper. Taxes are one of the certainties of life, but what worked for corporate taxpayers in the past may not work today. Eisner Amper can help. Visit EisnerAmper.com/tax certainty.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are gaining after yesterday's 1.5% decline for the S&P 500, which came as U.S.-China relations continue to deteriorate. After blacklisting 8 Chinese tech companies, the U.S. is slapping visa bans on officials linked to the mass detention of Muslims in China. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Selena Wang in Beijing.
We've heard some harsh comments from China saying the U.S. should retract its decision and stop interfering in China's internal affairs. This all sets a very tense tone headed into trade talks. The blacklist, the visa restrictions, limiting fund flows. There was already very low expectations that even a mini deal could be reached. And this just makes it seem like it's nearly impossible.
Despite that travel ban and blacklist, China is still open to a partial trade deal. That's according to an official with direct knowledge of the talks, who says Beijing would accept a limited agreement as long as no more tariffs are imposed by President Trump.
Now, the tension sent stocks in Asia lower, with the MSCI Asia Pacific Index falling 0.5%. But right now, Europe's Stoxx 600 is higher by 0.6%, and S&P futures are up 0.8%.
Those gains come after remarks from Jerome Powell that Sherman announced plans to resume Treasury purchases, but insists the move is not a return to quantitative easing.
Growth of our balance sheet for reserve management purposes should in no way be confused with the large-scale asset purchase programs that we deployed after the financial crisis.
Chairman Powell also hinted that another rate cut could be on the way. Andrew Balls is head of fixed income at PIMCO.
October looks likely, December looks very possible. Unclear for next year, but two more this year look quite likely.
Up next, we get minutes from the Fed September meeting at 2 p.m. Wall Street time.
On the corporate front, Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $8 billion over the alleged mishandling of an antipsychotic drug. The award is the largest this year and has shares of J&J down nearly 2% in early trading.
Shares of Levi Strauss are higher by 0.2%. Actually, they are higher by 0.2%. U.S. revenue for Levi's fell in the third quarter, though profit and sales still beat estimates.
And futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up 22 points. Dow futures up 181. NASDAQ futures up 68. And 10-year treasuries down 6/32, yield 1.54%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The White House is officially saying it will not cooperate with the impeachment probe. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
It says it's illegitimate and dangerous, and in a letter to Nancy Pelosi says it will not participate in any way with the inquiry. It says the inquiry lacks any legitimate constitutional foundation. Speaker Nancy Pelosi had expected this.
The president has said Article 2 says I can do whatever I want. No, it doesn't, Mr. President.
So this sets up a fiery constitutional clash that goes to the very heart of what the Constitution says about the foundation of checks and balances. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Turkish troops have begun crossing into northeastern Syria to force U.S.-backed Kurdish militants away from its border. That's according to what a Turkish official told Bloomberg in Ankara today. The Trump administration earlier said the U.S. would pull troops out of Syria, leaving the Kurds, a longtime ally in the fight against the Islamic State, to fend for themselves. PG&E, the California utility giant forced into bankruptcy by 2 years of devastating wildfires, is orchestrating the biggest planned blackout yet to keep power lines from sparking more blazes. PG&E has started cutting electricity to almost 800,000 customers across Northern California, including parts of Napa Valley, Oakland, and Berkeley. California Governor Gavin Newsom is not happy about the power shutoffs.
We are going to do everything in our power to get them out of bankruptcy and get them to fix their damn system so this will never have to happen again. This should not have to happen.
The main period of weather risk with a strong wind forecast is early this morning through Thursday midday. Montgomery, Alabama has elected its first black mayor. 45-year-old probate judge Stephen Reed won about 67% of the vote, defeating businessman David Woods. Mayor-elect Reed at his victory party last night.
We build around positivity, around opportunity, and all the things that tie us together, rather than those things that freak us apart.
Reed will be the first black mayor of the city where Southern delegates voted to form the Confederacy in 1861. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Rays may have a chance, after all, to slay the mighty Astros.
Swinging a line drive back up the middle. Right there is Wendell. He has it. Throws the first. Rays win! They beat the Astros, have evened up this series at 2 games apiece.
Rays radio as they pin a rare loss on Justin Verlander 4-1 to force a decisive Game 5 in Houston on Thursday. Blake Snell closed the game to preserve the win as the Rays used 6 pitchers and Verlander didn't see the 5th inning. Tampa Bay outhit Houston 13-6. If they can pull the upset, they'll visit Yankee Stadium Saturday night to kick off the ALCS. If Houston wins, they'll host New York on Saturday. On the ice, no, it wasn't Connor McDavid, the game's fastest skater who did in the Islanders at home, but well-traveled James Neal, who lived up to his nickname, the real deal James Neal, as he pushed 4 shots past Semyon Varlamov and Thomas Greiss to rout the Islanders 5-2, improving to 3-0. Matt Martin scored in a losing cause for the Islanders, who fell to 1-2. On the gridiron, is he in or is he out? Giants star running back Saquon Barkley hasn't ruled himself out for Thursday night in New England. The doctors and coach Pat Shurmur may feel differently.
Well, we're going to play with the guys that we have. I'm not going to talk about injuries other than the 2 concussion guys. Well, we'll put the next guys in and we'll go.
The undefeated Patriots are a 17-point favorite. And Jets quarterback Sam Darnold's officially back in the fold. He'll start under center when the Cowboys visit MetLife on Sunday. And Team USA women's gymnastics, just as dominant as a women's soccer team, make it 5 gold medals in a row and 7 overall as Simone Biles and company dominated the field in Germany. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thank you. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on how private equity is taking over the world. Also in this week's issue, a controversial startup that makes attack drones. Joshua Brustein wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
The company is called Anduril and describes itself as aspiring to be the operating system of the Defense Department.
Read more about it and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week on newsstands now and online at businessweek.com. Terminal customers can subscribe at MAG Go, and you can listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street, and that's time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. Networking and job site LinkedIn is expanding by about 189,000 square feet to occupy nearly 502,000 square feet at the Empire State Building. The Post says the company already occupies 313,000 square feet of that legendary 2.8 million square foot building. The New Jersey Economic Development Authority says the state's Angel Investor Tax Credit Program fueled the growth of Leap Insurance. That's a Jersey City-based startup. The program offers refundable corporate income tax credits against qualified investments for New Jersey businesses. New London, Connecticut is thriving, in part because of job explosion at Electric Boat and because of a multi-million dollar plan to use the state pier as a hub for offshore and wind turbines. According to the city's director of economic development, there's been a burst of growth downtown. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thanks. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Podisk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we're reporting on a Philly jury hitting Johnson & Johnson with an $8 billion verdict in an antipsychotic drug lawsuit.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Baker Hughes plans to cut General Electric from its name next week.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on Boris Johnson's upcoming talks with the Irish Prime Minister to save his Brexit plan.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, we're watching Caterpillar, which fell to a one-month low on concern that slowing economies and flagging demand will hit earnings.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting talks between General Motors and the UAW are deadlocked over job guarantees.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching today, Saudi Aramco planning to publish its IPO prospectus before the end of this month. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, which says Aramco is in the final stages of preparing to list shares on its domestic exchange. The prospectus will be reportedly published in Arabic first on October 25th, and then 2 days later, the English version will come out. S&P futures higher by 22 points. Dow futures up 174. NASDAQ futures up 67 points. This is Bloomberg. And the Tri-State Business Report was brought to you by Virgin Atlantic. Over 300 hours of onboard entertainment. Flatbeds for napping and afternoon tea. Daily nonstop flights to the UK in partnership with Delta Airlines.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and sources telling Bloomberg China is still open to agreeing to a partial trade deal with the U.S., signaling that Beijing is focused on limiting the damage to the world's second largest economy. China's offshore yuan extended gains following that report, still higher now by 0.4% against the dollar at 7.1337. The euro is at 1.0979 this morning. The yen is at 107.27. Futures are higher, with S&P futures up 22 points. Dow futures up 179. NASDAQ futures up 67. The DAX in Germany up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury down 7.30 seconds now. The yield 1.55%. Yield on the 2-year 1.43%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.25%, up 66 cents at $53.31 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.40 to $15.05.60 an ounce. And today we are watching for the JOLTS jobs report at a 10 o'clock Wall Street time, along with wholesale trade. And the Federal Reserve releases minutes from its latest meeting at 2. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi vows President Trump will be held accountable after the president said he will not cooperate with the impeachment inquiry. The White House called the inquiry illegitimate. Hundreds of protesters flooded a Hong Kong court to support the appeals case of a jailed activist today as the city continued to clean up from a weekend of unprecedented violence. In Major League Baseball, the Rays forced a deciding Game 5 in their ALDS with the Astros after a 4-1 win. This evening, there are two other Game 5s in the NLDS. The Nationals play the Dodgers. The Cardinals play at the Braves. The Islanders and the Capitals lost in the NHL. The Bruins won. Simone Biles led the U.S. women's team to another team gold at the World Gymnastics Championships in Germany. Biles became the most decorated female gymnast in history, winning her 21st World Championship medal. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
It is 5:49 on Wall Street, and it is time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion. Columnist Marcus Ashworth joins us from our London bureau to help us unpack all the developments we've seen on the U.S.-China trade front in just the last couple of days. Marcus, let's see where things stand right now. So we had the U.S. blacklist 8 Chinese tech firms, slap visa bans on officials tied to mass detentions of Muslims, and now there's this report from Reuters that Beijing is planning tighter visa restrictions in retaliation, and a source is telling us, and despite all that, that China's still open to an agreement on a partial trade deal, and the Financial Times just reporting that China's offering to buy an extra $10 billion of U.S. agricultural goods. Where are we?
We're in a state of confusion, which we have been for quite some while. I think the real debate is whether or not China's trying to narrow the field because he wants to get around its thorny problems with intellectual property and a variety of other technology transfer stuff, which they had agreed to early in the year and then reneged on. And clearly, you know, no real deal can go through without resolving those fundamental issues, which do stretch into, as far as the Chinese are concerned, as to how they run their entire country. So it's not a small problem. But I can't see how Trump can sort of wear this without, you know, basically admitting he's backing down, which he may well have to do, because, you know, if the ISM manufacturing PMI is any guide, we're probably going to have an economy weakening quite sharply right into the election next year, and he needs to get a economic boost sometime right around now. He's meeting Xi Jinping, I think, later in this month, or fairly soon anyway, and that's obviously going to be a clear moment where they could have a deal announced. There are some noises. You can see, you know, the China offering $10 billion, not here nor there really, but there is some push me, pull me, there's carrots and sticks going on here. A bit more noise building up. Both sides need a deal. Question is when they need it by. And I think that China has been managing very well. It's been carefully weakening its currency. That's now in a nice stable range. We're in this period after the national celebrations of the 70th anniversary of the creation of the Chinese Republic. And then we go into the fourth plenum, which is the big Communist Party get together later this month, and those are big things that they do not want to have unstable markets around. So I think we're in a fairly calm holding period, but maybe we get a deal when Trump and Xi meet together.
So you're thinking that the deadlines on the Chinese side politically are more pressing than perhaps the deadline on the U.S. side, which I'm thinking is probably November 2020.
I'd say the reverse. Sorry if I gave you that impression. I think the Chinese can afford to wait. They've been able to take a lot of the sting out of it. It's probably hurting much more than it is at the US. You just can't really see it in lifetime, and it's much less open economy. They both would like a deal. Politically, Trump needs one, I think. I think he needs to get this done before the election. And as I said, he needs an economic boost right around now to save away a probable dip in GDP just right before the election. The Chinese seem to be playing a longer game, but nonetheless, you know, they need a deal more longer term and short term. It's just a question of whether or not they feel they can wait till do a deal with a prospective Democratic president. Though, if it's Warren, say, I think they would get a rather nasty surprise. So be careful what they wish for in that sense. So all to play for.
Marcus Ashworth, Bloomberg Opinion columnist with us from our London bureau. Thanks, as always, for helping us to unpack these headlines as they continue to cross the Bloomberg terminal. And you can read more from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on your Bloomberg terminal. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Johnson & Johnson's Janssen unit has been hit with an $8 billion verdict over its alleged mishandling of an antipsychotic drug that's being blamed for causing young boys to grow female breast tissue. Federal authorities are considering designating nearly 176,000 square nautical miles of the Pacific Ocean as a protected habitat for three species of humpback whales. And two Senate Democrats are urging payment processing giants Visa, MasterCard, and Stripe to reconsider their involvement in Facebook's proposed Libra cryptocurrency because of risks to global finance systems and their own payment businesses.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal story. We're watching the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments in a case to determine whether anti-discrimination laws protect the workplace rights of millions of gay and transgender people. For more on the decision facing the justices, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with constitutional law expert Stephen Vladek, a professor at the University of Texas School of Law.
Steve, these were three separate cases, but with one legal issue under Title VII. What was that?
All three cases revolve around Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, really one of the most important pieces of legislation Congress has ever enacted that is, I think, most familiar to us as the central employment discrimination law in the country. And Title VII basically prohibits most employers, basically every business with more than, you know, a small number of employees, from discriminating against their employees on the basis of, among other things, sex. We've understood for as long as Title VII has been on the books that sex means you can't fire someone because they're a woman or even because they're a man. The question in all three of these cases is, does that also mean you can't fire someone because they are of a particular sexual orientation? Does it mean you can't fire someone because they identify as a particular transgender status, that they have a gender identity that might differ from what you perceive their biological sex to be? And so basically, it's all about the meaning of sex.
In an effort to win over one of the conservative justices who are textualists, the plaintiffs argue that they were following the plain text of the statute. Did that work?
The idea behind textualism and the animating principle is that when the words of a statute are clear, there's just nothing appropriate in looking behind those words. Basically, that the words should be the first place the courts look, and if the words are clear, it should be the last place they look. And so I think one of the things that's really interesting about this case is that in a world in which we were all just pure formal textualists, the law would actually seem to be pretty favorably on the side of the employees, of the challengers here, of those who are arguing the Title VII should extend to discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or transgender status. I think the problem that arose and that we saw from the oral argument is that the justices, I think, are not necessarily quite the fervent, committed textualists that they always put themselves out to be.
And as University of Texas law professor Stephen Vladek speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso, catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. We are watching futures this morning. S&P futures up 25 points, Dow futures up 196, and NASDAQ futures are up 77. The DAX in Germany is up 1%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 1.55%, and the yield on the 2-year at 1.43%. NYMEX crude oil up 1% or 52 cents at $53.15 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.2% or $3.10 at $1506.90 an ounce. Bloomberg Daybreak continues, and this is Bloomberg.